Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Carol Kelly and Gail Martin. Each week, the ladies will bring you planting and gardening ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies, and habitats. Great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Gail Martin.
Good morning. This is Gail Martin coming to you with another segment of In the Green Outdoors. Today's broadcast continues the commentary on shrubs and trees that are useful for food and medicine, but also ornamental and beneficial to wildlife. Today's trees are members of the pine family and also sassafras. Pine trees are one of the most varied genuses of native tree species in North America. There are four pine species considered native in Ohio. Our first species is the eastern white pine. It holds the title of the tallest native conifer in the Northeast. Typically, it grows 75 to 100 foot tall, and in extremely good sites, 150 feet is possible. Eastern white pine prefers moist, well-drained, sandy, loamy soils, but it'll grow in nearly any soil type and will establish on sites anywhere from wet bogs to stream beds to sand plains and even rocky outcroppings. Eastern white pine is a highly valuable and important native timber tree in the eastern United States. And it was once highly prized for use as ship masts because of its straight, tall, clear trunk. Its modern uses include trim, doors, lumber, paneling, Christmas tree products, pulpwood, veneer, and nursery stock. And also, this species has been used extensively in soil stabilization in strip mines, and the wood is soft, of medium strength, and very easy to work. It accepts stains and finishes very well, and is a favorite for use in furniture. It has been used to make beautiful formal evergreen hedges, but is only suited for large areas, and the seed is edible to humans. Eastern white pine seeds are also favored by black bears, rabbits, red squirrels, and many birds, and especially red crossbills. While potentially damaging to the trees, the bark is eaten by mammals such as beavers, snowshoe hares, porcupines, rabbits, and mice. My second pine species is the pitch pine. It's a small to medium-sized conifer, and it usually grows between 50 to 80 feet tall and maybe 1 to 2 feet in diameter. This is a tree for a poor site with dry, poor soil that and can range anywhere from well-drained to swampy. Native Americans had many uses for pitch pine. The Iroquois used the pitch for a variety of ailments and developed treatments for rheumatisms, burn, and cuts. They also found it had a use as a laxative. The Shinnecock tribe of New York found similar uses and made poultices for boils and abscesses. The Cherokee had a few non-medicinal uses, including the wood in canoe making, as well as for carving material. Pitch pine is interesting to me because it has needles that grow out of the trunk, which is one of the only trees that you will see actually having needles on the trunk. But pitch pine also was a major source of turpentine, which is distilled from the tree resin. And in years past, turpentine has been used in treatments for respiratory complaints like coughing, bronchitis, common colds, influenza, and in steam baths and as an inhaler. Skin problems, wounds, and sores were also treated with poultices and salves made from pitch pine. In the late 1800s, it was even used to treat tuberculosis. The wood of pitch pine is rich in resin, so much so that short pieces of timber were used as torches. Besides being a good source for resin and turpentine, it's also a good source for tar. Currently, pitch pine is used for pulpwood and for reforestation of dry sandy sites, and it's sometimes found in nurseries, but not commonly used in landscapes. Pitch pine provides habitat, it offers food for many wildlife species, And pitch pines can be used as cover and nesting for birds like the pine warbler, wild turkey, red-headed woodpecker, great crested flycatchers, blue jays, black-capped chickadees, black and white warblers, Nashville warblers, and chestnut-sided warblers. Deer consume the seedlings and new sprouts, and small mammals and birds eat the seeds. My third pine is the shortleaf pine, and it commonly will grow to about 100 feet in height and may grow to be 2 to 3 feet in diameter. Shortleaf pine is a major commercial timber tree, and it has strong wood that's used in many aspects of construction and furnishings, such as veneer, pulpwood, and naval applications, and lumber. It's even utilized for Christmas as greenery decoration and sometimes for Christmas trees. It has been used in reclamation efforts for mine sites, for erosion control, and watershed management. Shortleaf pine can be found in nurseries once in a while, but it also is seldomly used in landscaping. Like all pines, the resin contains turpentine, which can be distilled. Now, turpentine has been used in the past as a treatment for a variety of ailments, respiratory complaints like coughing and bronchitis, common colds, and influenza. And they were eased often by a steam bath and an inhaler using this pine. Skin problems, wounds, and sores have been treated with poultices and salves made from shortleaf pine. And a variety of wildlife will eat the seeds and browse on the foliage. Shortleaf pine also provides shelter and nesting sites for many birds and small mammals. The shortleaf pine is moderately resistant to deer damage and is also a great host plant for the eastern pine elfin butterfly and quite a few moths. Squirrels and other small mammals and birds will eat the seeds. My final pine, the Virginia pine, is a short to moderately lived tree, rarely reaching 150 years in age, and usually it begins to decline between 65 and 90 years old. Sometimes it'll look really ragged or shrubby if it's on a poorer site, but Virginia pines only grow to a height of 25 feet in 20 years and may reach a mature height between 40 and 70 feet. Virginia pine seeds are an important food source for many small mammals and birds. Older trees that have begun to suffer a little stem rot may provide a good nesting spot for woodpeckers. And when it's used for revegetation of mine areas, Virginia pine has a high value for wildlife cover and food and can be locally very important for foraging white-tailed deer. My final tree for today is sassafras. It's a tree known for its brilliant display of autumn foliage and its aromatic smell. The leaves might be 3 to 7 inches long. It's a bright to medium green in the summer and changes to the beautiful colors of yellow, deep orange, scarlet, and purple in the fall. Sassafras trees have a unique mitten, can be right or left-handed, and three-lobed leaves. If you want to plant sassafras, you need to plant it in full sun or partial shade, and you want to put it in moist, acidic, well-drained soil. Sassafras blooms in early spring with clusters of yellow flowers. It can be grown as a single trunk tree or sometimes as a dense, bushy thicket. If you want it to grow as a single trunk, you have to remove any shoots that develop at the base of the main trunk. Sassafras will grow at a medium to fast pace and can be 30 to 60 feet tall with a 25 to 40 foot spread. All parts of the sassafras tree have been used for culinary uses, medicinal or aromatic purposes. Throughout its natural range, the roots and bark were once used as a regular spring tonic. I suppose a lot of folks listening out there have had sassafras tea. The wood of sassafras trees has also been used as material for building ships and furniture here in the U.S., and sassafras played an important role in the history of European colonization of the American continent in the 16th and 17th centuries. In 1574, a Spanish physician announced that sassafras was a cure for almost every human ailment. It's too bad that wasn't so. Sassafras was an important plant to many Native American tribes and was used for medical treatments and also as a culinary ingredient. Sassafras twigs were used as toothbrushes and as fire starters. There's a lot of oil in sassafras, and sassafras root bark became the second largest export from America to Europe after tobacco in the early 17th century. Sassafras is an important ingredient in some distinct foods of the United States. It's the main ingredient in traditional root beer and sassafras root beer or root tea, and the ground leaves of sassafras are a distinctive addition to Louisiana Creole cuisine. Think filet powder, a common thickening and flavoring agent in gumbo. Sassafras is no longer used in commercially produced root beer since sassafras oil was banned for use in commercially mass-produced foods and drugs by the FDA in 1960. This was due to health concerns about the carcinogenicity of safrole, which is a major constituent of sassafras oil, and this was found in animal studies. No human studies have been made, so we don't really know how sassafras affects humans and what level might be dangerous to people. An interesting fact is that safrole is also present in various spices, like cinnamon, nutmeg, sweet basil, anise, and more. And some traditionalists think that the benefits of sassafras tea and sassafras oil, too, can outweigh its dangers and downfalls. Sassafras leaves and flowers have also been used in salads and to cure meats. And sassafras tea, made mainly from the young roots, is well known and its pleasantly fragrant aroma is unmistakable. The green buds and young leaves are also delicious used raw in salads. Now I have to mention here that I used to teach survival classes at a kids' camp. And one of the things that I always taught the kids that was that if you were caught out in wet weather, the best thing to do if you needed to start a fire was to go to a standing sassafras tree and pull any branches that appeared to be dead, because they would be drier, but they would have that wonderful oil that would help them be a good fire starter. So remember that. If you get caught out in the wilderness in the rain, look for a sassafras tree. Now, a good seed crop is produced every 2 to 3 years by a sassafras, and birds will quickly remove the ripe, high fat content and high energy fruits. And not only will the birds like the trees for nesting or fruit, but also butterflies and moths love sassafras. It's a known host plant for the tiger and spicebush swallowtail butterflies and several moths as well. And sassafras is the host plant for the Promethea, Imperial, Palamedes, Io, and silk moths. The tree's small size and fleshy blue-purple fruit make it a good choice for attracting birds, butterflies, and moths to your backyard or garden. I hope you've enjoyed learning more about our native pines and sassafras trees. Join me again in 2 weeks when my broadcast will cover the final episode of Native Trees and Shrubs. This is Gail Martin signing out for In the Green Outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it. Thank you for listening.